Mary Costakidis is an Australian television presenter. She is the former weeknight SBS World News Australia presenter and was the face of SBS across two decades. Mary was a member of the management team that set up and developed SBS television in 1980 and then went on to present its flagship World News for 20 years. Mary was born in Thessalonica in Greece and migrated to Australia with her family 2 years later. Mary Costakidis, what were the formative cultural experiences you grew up with? What were your favourite songs, your movies, films, theatre and art?
Well, I grew up in West Marrickville in Sydney, which was very Greek at that stage with a bit of Italian. And as you know, migrants tend to cluster together in the first generation. The second generation doesn't quite need that in the same way, but that's what they do when they come to another country. I'd go to the movies with my mother and she'd take me to see all these terrible tearjerkers. So we'd sit there sobbing our eyes out, and they weren't just Greek, some of them were Indian. And I remember Mother India, it was always the Romeo and Juliet story, you know, family feuding, that kind of thing. I mean, in the background, of course, there was Australian music, which you certainly were exposed to, particularly when you went to high school, not so much in primary school. So I, of course, was aware of what was happening here, you know, little Paddy stomping at Maroubra and all that sort of thing. And I suppose I engaged with that to an extent, but certainly most of my time and the time inside my head, I guess, is taken up by Greek music. And it would be a mixture of folk music, dancing music, because every weekend my parents would have the extended family over. And there was always lots of cooking and cakes and kourakia, biscuits. And Dad would always have the barbecue going, or he'd have some other, like lamb on the spit or whatever he was doing. And there'd always be dancing. And I think back now and wonder where they found the energy to do that. Because at the end of all of that, there'd be cleaning up to do. And there were always lots of children running around, cousins, you know, growing up in that sort of extended family situation. So there were folk songs, but there were also old songs that my parents grew up with. So from the sort of 30s and 40s and 50s, in Greece. And the great joy for me is I've now found those songs on Deezer. And this is what's so fantastic about the world we live in. All that material, somebody has archived it, somebody accesses it, and there it is. So it's great fun for me to build up on that collection. The other tranche of that music and those songs was something that is very popular, has had a great tradition in Greece, and that is poetry put to music. So the songs that are popular and that everyone can sing are actually poems. And that's something that you haven't experienced here. Can you imagine the words of Les Murray or Judith Wright or, you know, any Australian poet being put to music and being sung by everybody across generations? And this is what Greece produced, but also other countries were producing it too. And so there was a composer, which I'm sure your listeners will have heard of, Mikis Theodorakis, and he's best known for Zorba the Greek. But in fact, in Greece, he was far better known for all the wonderful songs that, some of which he wrote the lyrics and the music. But he also composed music to the lyrics of Ritsos and Seferis, some of Greece's most famous poets, one of them a Nobel Prize-winning poet, but also Nazım Hikmet, the Turkish poet, and Federico Garcia Lorca. So there was this wonderful, wonderful wealth of music and lyrics. And behind that was a story, a history, a struggle. It opened up a whole world for me that was quite different to the Australia that I was growing up in, because we lived in, you know, on a quarter acre block. It was a very safe existence. There was routine. I mean, this is why they migrated here. They wanted to get away from the civil wars and the famine and the depression and all of that. And they wanted to come to a country where they could work for a living and provide for their children. It was a great contrast because then, of course, as a child in the environment that I was being brought up in, I was not aware of similar struggles that had happened in this country with the Aboriginal people, for instance. So I thought this was a very, very safe, almost like a backwater, you know, the other end of the world, but weren't we lucky to be here because we were away from all that struggle, all that history. Actually, people all over the world have faced these struggles everywhere throughout history and indeed in Australia as well. That was the sort of music that I grew up with, and it was always exciting when someone, a singer, would come out from Greece like Maria Fananduri, who would sing all of Souvlaki's songs, and they were so moving.
I guess one of the things that we're reminded, speaking about your experience here in Marrickville, is that Greek families in particular seem to really hang on to culture and language. My background is more or less Italian, but every one of my Greek mates went to Greek school. The level of take-up of Greek language and affection for Greek culture was really strong.
Yes. Well, I had Italian friends and it was fairly strong there as well, though I wasn't aware of Italian afternoon school, so I think you've got a point there. Yes, I did go to Greek school, and the schools were very much affiliated with the churches. So you got a lot of religious input as well, and also, you know, celebration of national days, etc. And I was very much a part of that until I would have been about 13, and it was in the break at Sunday school. It all happened in the same church hall, Greek language classes and Sunday school, et cetera, and it was the same crowd. But for Sunday school, we were separated, so the boys and the girls had separate classes. And during the break, we'd come out into the playground and the boys would say, "We're not supposed to go to parties with you." And I said, "Well, why not?" And they said, "Because you're the devil." And I thought, "What?" So I confronted the Sunday school teacher with this. Well, confronted is probably not the word. I asked him. I could not believe that this saintly man, whom we all revered, would say this about us. And he put his hands together with his fingertips touching in this, you know, very saintly way, and explained to me how, yes, girls and boys mustn't go to parties together because there's temptation. And basically, it was all down to, you know, women are the devil. And that was a turning point for me, I have to say, Jeff, because I stopped going to Sunday school and I stopped going to church. And many years later, when there was an issue in our community, in the broader community, and I was presenting world news on SBS, and there was an imam somewhere who said something very silly. I can't remember the details now. Uncovered meat. That's right. And just a year or two before, my mother had passed away, so we had caused them to have connection with the Greek church again. And because she wanted to be cremated, but then to also have a Greek Orthodox service, which was extremely difficult to do, and that's another story. But the reaction from the Greek priest was, "How could you do this to your mother?" And my sister and I and my father said, "Well, this was her wish." And Dad, to his credit, said, "I just want to fulfill my wife's wishes." And he said, "If she wanted you to cut her up into pieces of meat and feed her to the dogs, would you do that?" So roll the clock forward to the imam who's got into terrible trouble doing this. I thought, I grew up with that kind of rubbish. And so it's not just happening in that community. It's happening far more broadly. But, of course, he was the one who captured, this chap captured the attention of the media. And then it was all about the Muslim community and a Muslim priest saying this, when I suspected that it was happening in many other cultures as well, and churches and environment.
Well, Mary, we are all of us, you and I, we're both over 55. We are aging, we are older. Can aging be fun? What are the benefits of aging?
Oh, well, you don't feel guilty anymore. I think you have more time. I don't know how much fun getting older is, in the sense that you are aware of changes. You can't do as much and go quite as quickly as you used to. But that's actually not a bad thing, because it means you contemplate much more. Yeah, I think having time and also being able to do what you want more than things that you have to do, because, you know, we've got this mental list of things we've got to do with our time, but then as you get older, you're aware that time's very precious. You don't forget what's fundamentally important. You give yourself permission to not shy away from what you see as being the truth. Whereas I think sometimes it's very hard to do that when you're younger, because you can feel isolated. As we get older, more of us do that. And it's wonderful. There's strength in numbers. The grandparents' brigade or the older person's brigade. I'm enjoying being part of that.
So, Mary Kostakidis, do you value your social connections?
Oh, very much. These days, of course, we connect with people socially in ways that we weren't able to in the past. And one of the things that's sacrosanct for me is my FaceTime, which happens at the same time on the same day every week, come hell or high water, with my grandchildren. And we have our half hour where they tell me all the exciting things that they've been doing, or they tell me their grievances, and they always want me to read books, and that's a lot of fun, and I enjoy selecting books that are interactive, that we can, you know, have fun with. There are other ways in which the digital world has allowed us to connect. We connect with people that we otherwise wouldn't be able to, both for pleasure and also for work, for more serious reasons. And along with having more time as we get older, I think it enables us to engage with a network of people around the world who may be interested in the same sorts of issues that we are. So if you're interested in, for example, the state of our democracy or capitalism around the world, or what are economists thinking about the failure of capitalism, and how do we reinvent it? What are the measures that need to be taken? All these sorts of things, or whether it's something quite concrete like Brexit, the big debate going on about Brexit. There is so much that you can access via the internet, but also being part of social media, being on Twitter, for example, you will hear of news as it's happening. Recently, that incident with Egg Boy, you know, the incident I mean, where that some young boy went up to
Fraser Anning.
Yes, broke an egg on his head. Well, that was on Twitter straight away, and then you saw images of the very, very big blokes holding down this pretty skinny kid in a headlock, and the other one was pressing on him. And so the Twitter world then communicates very quickly about this, and you can say, well, who is he? Is he all right? And someone else will send out a tweet, and then he'll put up a video saying, look, I'm fine. My name's so-and-so. I'm fine. But don't ever do that. That was really dumb of me to do that. There's a connection there in real time, not just in terms of talking about what's happened a few days ago or what might happen in the future, but actually situations that are unfolding. I think it's a very useful tool to become connected with people who are interested in similar things, the things that are important to you. And then, of course, there are those things that just give us pleasure, and you can spend hours researching material on YouTube or the internet more broadly. Someone some months ago sent me a link to a song that a young woman recorded, which I think you're going to be playing later on, perhaps at the end of our interview. And I thought, wow, that is extraordinary. What a beautiful voice this girl has. So I Googled her and found that she has a very similar background, or her ancestry is very similar to mine, but she's young enough to be my granddaughter. She recorded this song at Berkeley, where she did a master's in jazz and world music. So she's a jazz musician. She worked with Cirque du Soleil for a few years. She's a composer. And part of her thesis was that she composed this song about refugees in Spanish. Extraordinary talented young woman. And the song that she sang on the link that I was sent is a very, very centuries-old song that comes from Asia Minor, which is where my family comes from and where hers come from. My family ended up living in northern Greece, and hers ended up living in on Crete. And the song is about the fall of a city. It's literally about a young woman who's singing in a palace high up on a mountain, and the sailing boats have to stop and let go their halyards and unfurl their sails because they're entranced. And they beseech her, young maiden, change your song so they can get going again. And she says, 'tis not a song but a lamentation, so she can't. And there was one word that I couldn't understand, because it's not in the vernacular Greek of today. It's in Pontian, which is closer to the dialect of Greek that the people spoke around the Black Sea area, all the way to the Sea of Marmara. There was one word, I have no idea what that means. I joined Facebook. You want to be careful that you don't spend all your time sitting down with a device. I've avoided Facebook and Instagram and that kind of thing. But I joined Facebook because I wanted to get in touch with her. And I asked her if she'd please put up the lyrics. Could she translate the song? Could she get it on Deezer or Spotify so that I can, you know, I don't have to watch it on YouTube. Anyway, it was instantaneous. She put up the translation. All these other people that obviously are her friends on Facebook were thrilled. You know, those that didn't speak Pontian could understand every word of this extraordinarily beautiful song. And then she also put it on Spotify and Deezer. That's what's really special about, one of the things that's really special about being alive today, you know, whether you're a younger or an older person, but probably even more so for older people, because we have the time to do this. When you're younger, you're having children, you're working hard, you know, you're on a bit of a treadmill, whereas now you have much more leisure time. Yes, it's yours to do whatever you want with it. So you can establish these connections. You can research and establish these connections, and it can be very, very fulfilling.
You tell me that you have quite an online presence. You Facebook, you FaceTime, and you love to go down rabbit holes on the internet, so do I. What about the real life face-to-face stuff over a cup of coffee?
Of course I do that too, and I have family that I see regularly, and the fact is that the sort of lives that people lead today, many of my friends no longer live in Sydney. Some of them are overseas. Some of them are still working but are posted elsewhere. One's gone to Canberra. She's now part of the judiciary there. Another one retired and lives up in Byron Bay. People move around a lot more, I think, than they used to. The notion that you would grow up in an area and go to school there and then work there and still live in the same area and then that your parents lived in or whatever, that's all changed. My daughter doesn't live here. She lives in New York, has done for quite some years. And although there's always a plan to come home, who knows? And then her husband's family, there are four children in his family, and they all live overseas. And his parents come from Battersea. So life isn't as contained as it used to be. And you have to make more of an effort to have that face-to-face interaction. So I travel a lot. That's the only way I can connect with my family who live overseas, for a start, and even my friends. It's the reality of today, I'm afraid.
Mary Kostakidis, thank you very much for joining us today on Nostalgia Town. What is your choice of song for us to go out on today?
Well, it's the song from the Sea of Marmara that I was talking about earlier, called Corazón Etraudaye, which means a girl was singing. And it's performed by Irini Tornasaki.
What a wonderful name. Mary Kostakidis, thank you very much for joining us today on Nostalgia Town.
Pleasure, Jeff.